I see so many good things happening. So many people. I teach a course on climate change at the University of Virginia, and my students are passionate about this issue. They know it's their problem for the future. They want to be part of the solution. It's just so invigorating to work with them.
Dan Reif-Snyder, thank you very much for talking to us. This is as the United States has formally left the Paris Climate Agreement. That's all we have time for today on The Times at One. Thanks to all the production team today. Rosie Wright and Fee Glover are now in the studio with me today. What's coming up on the programme?
We have got Amanda Owens after 3:30, the Yorkshire vet.
Oh,
the Yorkshire shepherdess. I'm sure she can do it. I'm sure she can do it as well.
She's probably multi-talented and multitasking.
Considering that she's raising 9 children and running a farm and doing all the things associated with that, shearing all the sheep, etc. And doing this with her partner, of whom they are now separated but living at the same farm. It is so complicated. If anyone thinks they've got a big to-do list today, Amanda will tell us later on today what she's done this morning. And I think it might give us a bit of a reality check.
I'm exhausted already.
Exactly. Anyone who's got a complicated family or is thinking of having them filmed, it's definitely the interview for you.
Stay tuned.
Across the UK, on DAB digital radio, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
Thank you very much, Joe. Good afternoon. It's 2 o'clock. You're listening to Fee Glover and Rosie Wright on Times Radio.
Coming up on the programme, Reform are announcing their candidate for the Gorton and Denton by-election as we speak. We'll bring you that as soon as we have it with Daisy Eastlake, a political reporter for The Times. Tennis in an Australian heatwave, anyone? We'll discuss how the Australian Open is managing the plus 40 temperatures with TalkSport's Toby Gillies. Storm Chandra has led to severe danger to life flood warnings to be issued in parts of the UK. We'll hear from the mayor of one of the worst affected areas. And our big guest, as you just heard, after 3:30 p.m. is the Yorkshire shepherdess, Amanda Owen, discussing the latest series of Our Farm Next Door.
All of that happens after the news with Will Hobbs.
Thank you, Fee. Good afternoon. A report by MPs and a senior NATO advisor has warned that the United States is no longer a reliable ally and Britain must make an immediate transition to war readiness if it is to protect its democracy. It says the security guarantee that the US has provided for 7 decades is no longer valid because President Trump has put America's commitment to defend Europe in doubt. The report by Civitas said the international rules-based order was effectively dead. The chair of the charity behind Holocaust Memorial Day has told Times Radio the number of secondary schools in England marking it has dropped 60% since October the 7th. So Sasha Javid, the former Conservative Chancellor, says rising anti-Semitism has clearly led to that. He says it's not necessarily because teachers don't want to, though.
It could be, I think, more complicated than that, too. So, for example, I've spoken to school teachers, head teachers. If there's someone that says to them that if you do this, then we will demonstrate or we will react, then it can be fear. That can be a reason. And of course, that's wrong as well.
Holocaust Memorial Day marks the 81st anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz. The King and Queen are hosting survivors and families at Buckingham Palace. Minnesota's chief judge has ordered the head of ICE to appear in court this week. Chief Judge Patrick J. Schiltz says the Trump administration failed to comply with orders to hold hearings for detained immigrants. Todd Lyons, the acting director of ICE, must appear personally in court on Friday. The mayor of Minneapolis revealed earlier that the Trump administration is preparing to pull federal agents out of the city. Oxfam has been investigated for major flaws in staff vetting practices, despite its promises to overhaul safeguarding in the wake of the Haiti sexual abuse scandal. The Times understands that the aid giant made 3 serious incident reports to the Charity Commission in 2024 concerning major lapses in vetting new staff. One insider claimed that 45% of about 600 new employees and volunteers in Britain between 2022 and 2024 did not have references and disclosure and barring service checks properly completed. The daughter of deceased footballer Gordon McQueen has called for professional footballers to have a brain scan before the start of every season to check for possible brain injuries. It's after a coroner ruled that heading the ball was a likely factor in the former Manchester United and Scotland defender developing dementia. His daughter Hayley, who's a Sky Sports presenter, told Times Radio there's widespread fear amongst family members of retired players.
There is an epidemic at the moment. I know a lot of footballers. I'm in a group with a lot and speak to a lot of the wives and daughters and sons of these players who are terrified and they're already showing signs and don't know what on earth to do about it. Had they have known the risks when they played, maybe they'd have made a decision not to head the ball as much.
And Coco Gauff has said there's a lack of privacy at the Australian Open and criticised broadcasters for showing footage of her smashing a racket 7 times moments after her defeat by Alina Svitolina in the quarterfinals. Gauff was thrashed by the mother of one, Svitolina, in under an hour in the tournament's biggest shock so far. The world number three has had conversations must be had over where players can expect to be away from the cameras. And for a news bulletin, when you want it, search for the Times News Briefing on any podcast platform.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, on the free Times Radio app, online, and on your smart speaker. Afternoons on Times Radio with Wix, kitchens and bathrooms.
Fee Glover and Rosie Wright with you today. Not what the app says, we've discovered.
We have. It says Jane is here. I'm afraid Jane will be back tomorrow.
Jane is not here. Jane is making her way back from Liverpool. It's Fee and Rosie with you until 4 o'clock. The by-election is where we'll start. Richard Tice wouldn't tell Joe who would be standing for reform against It's Not Andy Burnham, but we are just about to find out, so we will bring that news to you. How hot does it need to get before tennis players simply can't play at the Australian Open? It has been super hot there this year. As we heard in the news bulletin, over 40 degrees. So many players have suffered. Is this really what they should be expected to do? Is it realistic tennis if you're playing in that kind of heat? And what about all of the people who go along for fun to watch? Well, empty seats show that not everybody is prepared to put up with that heat. And also, close the roof, put on the aircon. Sometimes that is the available option. Back here, we're going to talk about floods in the UK with the mayor of a Devon town where there is a risk to life warning. And it's no coincidence with both of those stories that we should also talk about climate change. And in the second hour of the programme, we will discuss America's reluctance to take part in the global discussions dealing with the climate emergency as it exits the Paris Agreement for the second time. In health news, which happens every Tuesday on this programme, 3 really important stories: measles, hearing aid batteries, and the connection between the menopause and Alzheimer's. And after 3:30, who graces our presence, Rosie?
The Yorkshire Shepherdess. She's known, of course, as Amanda Owen, who has probably the most chaotic household of anyone I've ever spoken to. I'm one of 4 girls, so that definitely was a busy household growing up with its moments of chaos, but it really is nothing on this family. So Amanda and Clive Owen, they are recently divorced. They, though, still both live on a farm in the Yorkshire Dales that they run. They're currently renovating, a multi-year significant renovation, and they've got 9 children. So we're going to be asking Amanda a little bit later, and you may have seen some of her life on the Channel 4 programme already. The new series just started a week and a bit ago. How does she manage all those competing priorities? Her house, her children, her home, which is also her farm and her job. The complications of doing all of that, particularly post-divorce with her ex-husband and then a camera crew there that they've obviously invited in to document it all. If you fancied living on a farm, she can give us the realities and just quite the complexities of that family makeup.
Yeah, it's a dizzying life, isn't it?
Beyond. She's going from sort of homeschooling, sheep shearing, rescuing a lamb that's fallen down a mineshaft that they've just found, to then planning one of 9 birthdays that happens each year in that household. So the chaos of it all and the way she navigates it, we'll find out a little bit later.
So that happens after 3:30 this afternoon. What are the most read stories so far today?
And we've got more on this at 3 o'clock. Number 3 on the Times website this afternoon: Trump to withdraw agents and border patrol chief from Minneapolis. The US president seems to be sidelining Gregory Bovino and his hardline Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem. Polling is showing that voters are turning against those anti-immigration tactics. We'll talk about this later in the programme. The second most read story is Coco Gauff smashes her racket after the Australian Open defeat by Alina Svitolina. She's the number 3 seed, bemoaning the lack of privacy after footage showed her destroying her racket in frustration. We're going to have more before 2:30, actually, on the tournament and its record temperatures soon. And the most read piece on the Times website is EU agrees mother of all trade deals with India in rebuffed Trump. The European Commission's Ursula von der Leyen says an agreement to end $4 billion of tariffs sends a message that rules-based cooperation works. You can read all of those stories yourself if you head to thetimes.com. You will need your digital subscription. If you don't have one, get one. You can go to thetimes.com/subscribe.
Now, the former academic Matt Goodwin is Reform's candidate for the Gorton and Denton by-election. News hot off the press. It comes as more than 50 Labour MPs have written to the Prime Minister expressing their anger at the decision to block Greater Manchester Mayor Andy Burnham from standing. Plenty to talk about with Daisy Eastlake, political reporter for The Times. Daisy, tell us what you know about Matt Goodwin.
Yeah, so Matt Goodwin's just been unveiled as Reform's candidate. He's just taken to the stage. He's a British Conservative political commentator, so he's got a big following on websites like X and on Substack. And he's been affiliated with Reform for some time. You know, he writes about right-wing political commentary. And yeah, so he's a former academic, as you mentioned as well. He's a lecturer of professor of politics at the University of Kent. But yeah, he's been involved in Reform for a while, but he's maybe not one of their more visual figures like Zia Yusuf. But he's a local man as well. He's from the area, so he's their candidate that they've chosen to represent this part of Greater Manchester.
Daisy, some people were expecting a bigger name.
Yeah. Some people were expecting them to really pull out all the stops because this is such a tight race between Reform and the Greens. So there was lots of speculation in the last 24, 48 hours that it could be, you know, Zia Yusuf versus Zach Polanski type by-election. But of course, both of those candidates have not been selected. And it's looking like they will be more local representatives rather than necessarily what we kind of expected for a little while, which was a bit of a political circus of all these big names from Reform and these big names from the Greens battling it out for this seat.
And tell us a bit more about the statistics behind that battle, and in particular where Reform's popularity is at the moment.
Yeah, so I mean, this battle is particularly important because, you know, it's now being seen as a two-horse race between Reform and the Greens, which is particularly interesting because we've probably never had a situation quite like that. It's a good early test for the Greens, but also for Reform to see if they can win a seat like this. This seat's quite interesting. It's got quite a strong working class population, but it's also got quite a strong Muslim population. And it's polling currently to be really tight between Reform and the Greens. Now, sources on both sides of that have said that, you know, if Andy Burnham had been allowed to stand as the Labour candidate, then this would not be the situation that we would be in right now, and that would have been a much more difficult fight for either of those parties. But with him barred from standing, the knock to the local Labour support here, which, you know, this was a really strong Labour seat, but people are saying that blocking Andy Burnham as such a local voice from standing in this constituency has not done Labour any favours. It's turned into a real battle between it looks like it will turn into a real battle between Reform and the Greens, and Labour could be falling into third place.
The leap from Labour to Reform is not a logical one if you look at what a manifesto for either party might contain. But there is quite a feeling, isn't there, within that constituency that is absolutely a possible leap for quite a lot of people. Can you tell us a bit more about why?
Yeah, 100%. Well, you know, yes, okay, if you sat down and you put the manifesto side by side, you probably wouldn't find too many similarities on paper. However, this is not about, you know, a crossover between policies. This is about how people feel about Westminster and the national direction of the country. So there's a big chunk of people in Gorton and Denton, working class people perhaps, who feel like, you know, their money's not stretching as far as it used to, or like people in Westminster don't listen to them. You know, there's lots of talk. People will always say that, you know, Keir Starmer was not elected on a personal mandate because of his vision. He was elected because people wanted change from the Tories. And there's this growing feeling that he's not been able to deliver that. So it's less that Labour's voters who supported Labour at the 2024 general election feel like Reform is a viable alternative that's similar to what they voted for before. It's actually that, you know, the way that the Labour government has operated since being elected in 2024 has not satisfied them. And they feel like they're looking to alternatives for a new direction. And that's where reform can come in and can cut through and can talk about wasted spending and efficiencies and, you know, where the money is going, and really hit through with people who feel like their money's not going as far as it used to.
All of those things will be recognised by those 50 MPs who have written to Keir Starmer. But I wonder whether or not 50 MPs signing a letter is actually not the immense backlash that many people predicted Keir Starmer would get.
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely talk that he could have faced a lot more backlash for what happened with Andy Burnham. But this is early days, I think. And I think that potentially actually the outcome of this by-election, which is set to take place in a month's time, you know, could kind of stir that back up again. If we're in a situation in a month's time where Reform or the Greens or someone else has taken the seat off of Labour, although their argument was it would be much more expensive and risky to contest the Manchester mayoralty, it's inevitable that losing a seat like this is definitely going to stir up some conversations about whether that was the right move to make.
Keir Starmer heads to China tonight. What's the headline that he doesn't want to see after that visit?
So I suppose he'll be particularly worried about the story that broke late last night about China hacking phones, and there was this claim that China was inside phones in Downing Street for years. He's said this morning, or his spokesperson said this morning, that that Starmer's phone has never been hacked, but it's reopened these conversations again about Chinese surveillance and how much diplomacy you can really do with a state like China. So he will be very nervous of headlines around that. But his pitch is that you have to engage with countries that, you know, that you disagree with for the sake of diplomacy, and also that China poses a massive trade benefit to the UK. And so trips like this are really important.
He's in a thruple, isn't he, on the world stage? So it also matters what President Trump makes of Keir Starmer's visit to China.
Yeah, definitely, undoubtedly. And, you know, Starmer also talks up a lot his trade successes with Donald Trump and his diplomatic relationship. You know, he said in an interview over the weekend that he wants to maintain close ties with the US on business, on security and on defence. But, you know, that he's kind of stuck between a bit of a rock and a hard place, because he also said that sticking your head in the sand and ignoring China wouldn't be sensible. So he's got to balance the two. But, you know, in a world that is looking increasingly less and less reliable, you know, his argument is that you have to build diplomatic relationships with foes as much as you do with friends.
There's been so much talk about the security aspect of this trip, hasn't there, Daisy? And I can't help thinking that the image of Theresa May having to get dressed and undressed in a tent because of her fears of being compromised on her trip to China have probably done more to get across to the public the level of spying undertaken by that country than any long read or briefing paper. Might we expect some delicious anti-spyware detail from Sir Keir? I think it would play to his strength if we did.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it will come out some way. Whether it will come out directly from Starmer, I'm unsure. But, you know, I'm sure details like that will start to arise, because this is a country that you have to, that, you know, the government will be cautious about, and will have to be, you know, they'll have to be making sure that they are walking that diplomatic tightrope that Starmer mentioned over the weekend. So I think we'll see how they manage that over the course of the trip.
Do we know if his team popped to Millets first?
No, I don't think we know. I'm not sure whether or not they've actually, you know, made
got
any
a tent.
Yeah. Maybe they have. Who knows?
Thank you for keeping a straight face trying to answer that question. Daisy Eastlake is political reporter for The Times. I mean, it's, you know, I'm not trying to be facetious, because it's incredibly important, the spy story around China. You know, it's cost people their lives, but it is in the detail and the visual imagery that sometimes the story really sticks. And the idea that Theresa May had to have a tent erected around her by her team so she wasn't the victim of any compromising photographs while staying on Chinese soil is ludicrous.
Yeah.
And once you've imagined it, you can never get it out of your head.
What's going to be really interesting, Stephen Swinford from The Times is going on this trip with the Prime Minister. So too is Anna Mikhailova, of course, Times Radio's political correspondent. And whenever you go on a trip with the Prime Minister, there are different, you know, specifications that you've got to subscribe to, and the tech that they've had to bring or not bring with them, that the UK government has said, if you're coming on this trip with the Prime Minister, we need to make sure, you know, you've got this very specific type of phone, has really been quite extraordinary. And that's part of the story, I think, the kind of security implications for anyone who's travelling even anywhere near the Prime Minister because of these concerns about technology and what access you are potentially giving away even when you go on these trips.
Isn't it when you are least expecting it that you are the most vulnerable, though?
You would imagine so. And what's quite an interesting thing, Keir Starmer is still using TikTok to deliver some information, but government phones aren't allowed to have TikTok on them because of this kind of wariness that we have around the information that China might be harvesting. So we've got a sort of kind of murky picture exactly there about what the UK government's stance is, that maybe that will get sharpened up over the next few days.
Well, don't live your life in a Faraday box. You can be in contact with us anytime you like. It's 0333 003 2353, and we're Jane and Fee at times.radio.
Coming up here, how hot is too hot for a game of tennis? Not just playing, but for watching it as well. We'll find out what's been happening at the Australian Open next. It is 19 minutes past two. This is Jane and me, Rosie, on Times Radio with Wix. Sorry, it is... it is Fee and Rosie. So not only have I said it incorrectly, the app we hope is being fixed at some point.
It's written in the script. Shall we just go home?
Well, my name wasn't even there, but I subbed out the wrong one. So you are in the company of Rosie and Fee on Times Radio with Wix this afternoon until 4 o'clock.
We're not diminished at all. We're fine. Fine.
With Wix, the kitchen and bathroom sale is now on. Explore all the sale offers at wix.co.uk or visit your local Wix store.
Times Radio Breakfast with Kate McCann and Stig Abel.
Tune in to Times Radio Breakfast live from 6 o'clock. Kate and I will bring you all the news and views it says here you need to know. That includes the Prime Minister being in China. We're going to hear from our correspondents who just got off a plane with the Prime Minister himself.
And, of course, from 9, the Times' Giles Corran and the Sun's Jane Moore, who you might know from Loose Women, will talk us through the news of the day.
Times Radio Breakfast with Kate McCann and Stig Abel. Tomorrow morning from 6 on Times Radio.
I thought that I'd seen beauty. Then I sailed where icebergs gleam. I thought I'd witnessed nature, but this surpassed my dream. I thought that I'd known wonder, then sailed beneath these skies. I thought I'd seen the world until I opened my eyes. Change the way you see the world with HX Expeditions. Search Travel HX to discover more.
Download the free Times Radio app and listen to us wherever you are.
Afternoons on Times Radio with Wix Kitchens and Bathrooms. Wix local design experts are ready to help. Whether you start with an in-store design consultation or with a free home measure, it's completely up to you. Find out more about the free design service at wix.co.uk.
21 minutes past two. Now, before we talk about some extreme weather here with some very horrible danger to life warnings because of floods, what about literally the other side of the world? Extreme temperatures have hit the Australian Open again today. Temperatures in the mid-40s. Some matches have been cancelled, although the world number one Carlos Alcaraz secured a place in the semi-finals with a victory over Alex de Minaur. Toby Gillies has been covering the Open for TalkSport. I spoke to him a little earlier and started by asking the question we all want to know: how hot actually is it in Melbourne?
Well, right at this second, it's nighttime, so we're not too bad. But yeah, it has been the hottest day at Melbourne Park in 17 years, 45 degrees Celsius. The mercury hit. On court, inevitably, that's even hotter. So an absolute disaster for any sportsman at any level to play in. Generally speaking, it's been okay today because they suspended play on the outside courts, which do not have roofs. We're at a stage of the tournament where they can do that and it doesn't cause too much of a scheduling issue. All of the singles matches, the quarterfinals that started today, two women's and two men's, have been played on Rod Laver Arena, which does have a roof. And so they were able to close it when their own sort of heat rating hit 5, the maximum, which is when they then close the roof and they can put the air conditioning on.
And then it brings the temperature rapidly down.
Yes,
I think
absolutely.
Sort of from like 42 degrees to 26, yes. I saw.
Yeah.
What is that heat scale rating? Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, they call it the heat stress rating system, and they basically measure four factors, and I'm afraid I'm going to have to read this because knowing it off by heart is too much for me, having been up since 10 to 1 in the morning. So they measure these four factors, which are radiant heat, which is the strength of the sun, the air temperature in the shade, the relative humidity, and the wind speed. And of course, by wind speed, they don't mean how windy it is in, you know, the more wind, better. They mean how little there is. And, you know, on these courts, these huge show courts with, you know, stands right the way up to the, to, you know, you practically can't see the top of them from when you're standing on court. There is very, very little wind. So as soon as it reaches their own stress factor of 5, that is the point at which they close the roofs.
I mean, you kind of think, what happens at stage 4 and stage 3
yes,
then?
Yes, absolutely. Well, Aryna Sabalenka, the world number one, who started her quarterfinal at 11:30 a.m. local time this morning, said that at the end of the match, it was at 4.4. And she said, it was very, very, very hot. And I was beginning to struggle, but I'm glad I got through. That match was played with a sort of partially closed roof, which meant that there was shade sort of at the back of the court for both players, which I think is really important. They're very sensible about it in Melbourne, and they have to be. And of course, in Australia, they know all about the heat, generally speaking.
Why don't they just close the roofs for all the tournament?
It's a sporting integrity thing. These are outdoor tournaments. I mean, we have this problem not at 45 degrees generally, but we have it to a degree at Wimbledon as well. And of course, they've now got the roof over centre court, and it's exactly the same. Where possible, where it is safe to do so, they want this to be an outdoor tournament. And it's particularly important in tennis because essentially the way that the ball flies through the air is completely different indoor to outdoor. And some players are better as indoor players. It's obviously much, much more predictable. There's no wind, etc. So, you know, it can give a bit of an unfair advantage to some of the top players or with players with particular skills. And these tournaments, the Grand Slams, all four of them are outdoor tournaments. So where possible, they will keep the roof open.
Yeah, Sinner was quite lucky for his gameplay because I think it's about 3 sets in, they then closed the roof. You get that 8-minute break, brought the temperature down, and then that was to his advantage.
Yeah, Jannik Sinner, the defending champion, this was on Saturday, was playing a player that under any normal circumstance you would expect him to win quite comfortably against. But he had lost the first set, he'd pulled it level in the second set, but he was a breakdown in the third. And to all intents and purposes, this was a man who looked like he was potentially heading out, and he started cramping. I've rarely seen a tennis player unable to move in the way he was. He sort of had straight legs, and he was almost hobbling around, kind of like, looked like a penguin at one point. His whole body went into cramp at the precise moment that the heat stress factor hit 5. And so he was then very fortunate, by his own admission, that they then closed the roof. As you say, the 8-minute break, temperature comes down. He won through in 4 sets. But I think that the defending champion would have been out. And that would have been unbelievable because he and Carlos Alcaraz, the current world number one, have won the last 8 Grand Slams between them.
I mean, I really am clearly not a tennis expert. But listening to that, I mean, it sounds pretty dangerous. Are there not bigger questions to say, maybe we are hosting this tournament in the wrong place or maybe at the wrong time of year?
There's huge swings in temperature in Melbourne. I'm not a weather expert, but my understanding is when the wind comes from the north, it's a massive problem. And when it comes from the south, actually, it can be, you know, relatively speaking, for an Australian summer, really quite cold. So they are very aware of it. The main issue, I think, with moving the tournament to another time of year is, I mean, these Grand Slams have been sort of set in stone, and they're the tournaments that are built around for all the rest of the tournaments throughout the year within tennis. I don't quite know how you make that change. There's so little room to reschedule. You wouldn't have Wimbledon in January here, would you, in order to allow Australia to have a tournament in June or July? Because can you imagine us trying to get Wimbledon completed in the middle of winter? It just wouldn't happen. And so these tournaments would be reluctant to move. Could they potentially move it to another part of Australia? I mean, you know, Melbourne has been the home of the Australian Open for forever. Doing so, I think, would be nigh on impossible.
We're heading towards the final stages of the tournament.
Yeah.
Just tell us what we should be looking out for.
Aryna Sabalenka, the world number one, who lost the final very surprisingly last year, but had won the 2 previous years, I think now looks like the outstanding player in the women's draw, that is. Iga Swiatek is her potential rival. Hasn't played that well in this tournament, but is still there. She is looking to win the career Grand Slam, which would mean at least one victory in all four Grand Slams. It's the same story for Carlos Alcaraz, who at the time that we're talking is very close to winning his quarterfinal. That'd be the first time he's ever reached the semi there. So he is looking also for the career Grand Slam. But Jannik Sinner is the big rival. As I mentioned, those two have won each of the last eight Grand Slams between them. And so often now with the men's, we look at it and we go, well, is it just going to be one of these two? And at the moment, they're the dominant forces. So I think Sabalenka and then one of Sinner or Alcaraz. And right now, I think Alcaraz is looking sensational.
And Alcaraz got in trouble because he had a whoop band on.
Yes. Not the only one, actually. It's interesting because these Grand Slam tournaments can make their own rules regarding these tech wearables. Jannik Sinner also wore one, and they managed to get away with it earlier in the tournament because they were wearing them under sweatbands, but they've been spotted. And Australian Open rules state that you can't have these tech wearables. They all want them so that they can judge, you know, the right recovery. Every tiny inch when you're at this level of tennis is absolutely massive. So about recovery, about sleep, about calories that you need to take in, all of that sort of stuff is vital. You're allowed to wear them in other tournaments, but in the first Grand Slam of 2026, they've decided not. So these players have been in trouble, but they've just said, you know what, it's fair enough. It's a minor thing for us. We'll just get on with playing the tennis.
So the whoop bands are off. Toby, thank you.
Whoop, whoop.
Toby Gillies from TalkSport there. What we didn't talk about is, as a spectator, would you even want to go when it's that hot? And there are some empty seats.
No, you wouldn't. You wouldn't.
I don't know how... I could not sit, I think, through a game if you were going to be in the sun at that temperature.
Well, they had that problem at Wimbledon, didn't they? There were quite a few people who passed out. And as the sun grazes across those open courts, it can be merciless if it's over 30. Thank you very much to John from East Kilbride. Just for context, 45 degrees is hot. It's 113 Fahrenheit in old money. Your older listeners might recognise that. I'm grateful. I might not actually be as old as some of our listeners, John, but I still like it in old money.
Excellent.
I find it much, much easier to understand.
Yeah, Chris says, on a cooler note, I'll be out playing tennis tomorrow in Newcastle at 3 degrees wrapped up.
Good for you. And this from Pete, who says, I'd need a marquee erecting in terms of spyware and tents. I'm sure that's not true. Coming up, we're going to get the very latest on Storm Chandra. It is just gone 2:30. It'll be after the news with Will Hobbs.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker, this is Times Radio.
Thank you, Fee. Good afternoon. A report by MPs and a senior NATO advisor has warned that the United States is no longer a reliable ally and Britain must make an immediate transition to war readiness if it's to protect its democracy. It says the security guarantee the US has provided for 7 decades is no longer valid because President Trump has put America's commitment to defend Europe in doubt. Flights and ferries have been cancelled and hundreds of schools are closed in Northern Ireland with the arrival of Storm Chandra. Forecasters say heavy rain, wind is now the main concern. Significant snow's fallen in northeast England and fresh flood warnings cover Wales. In Devon and Somerset, dozens of people have been rescued from their cars. Ben Williams is group commander at the fire service.
In some instances, water has been at waist level and above. You know, people have had to escape to the roofs of their cars. The water can hide many other obstacles and dangers to pedestrians as well as motorists.
Minnesota's chief judge has ordered the head of ICE to appear in court this week on Friday. Chief Judge Patrick J. Schiltz says the Trump administration failed to comply with orders to hold hearings for detained immigrants. In the last hour, Matt Goodwin has been announced as Reform UK's candidate in the upcoming Gorton and Denton by-election. He's a political commentator and honorary president of the party's student wing. And one battle after another leads the way in this year's BAFTA film nominations. It's up for 14 awards, just ahead of Sinners, which is recognised in 13 categories. Hamlet has 11 nominations. And don't forget, you can set the Times News briefing as your flash briefing on Alexa.
This is Times Radio.
3, 2, 1, it's live! Go, 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 go!
We're bursting to tell you something big. Your entertainment destination has landed, and it's bursting with all your favourites.
Are you impressed by that?
A little.
Yeah, me too.
Say hello to TLC. Full to the brim with The Big Bang Theory, Young Sheldon, and brand new Georgie and Mandy's First Marriage.
What if I'm dreaming?
And just to make it even sweeter, it's completely free.
Bazinga.
TLC, bursting with great telly. wherever you watch free TV.
Here's the truth about AI. AI is only as powerful as the platform it's built into. ServiceNow puts AI to work for people across your business, removing friction and frustration for your employees, supercharging productivity for your developers, providing intelligent tools for your service agents to make customers happier. All built into a single platform you can use right now. That's why the world works with ServiceNow. Visit servicenow.com/UK/AI for people.
Download the free Times Radio app and listen to us wherever you are.
Afternoons on Times Radio with Wickes. Are you dreaming of a new kitchen? Let Wickes guide you through the wide range of stunning styles, appliances and worktops. Kitchens start from under £3,000. Get started by booking your free design appointment at wickes.co.uk.
It's 2:33. It certainly hasn't been a dry January for many of us, thanks to Storm Chandra, which has brought flooding, disruption, school closures across the UK. In a moment, we're going to speak to the Mayor of Ottery, St Mary in Devon, where a severe danger to life flood warning has been issued after the River Otter reached its highest recorded level. First, let's get the latest, though, from the meteorologist, Joe Wheeler. Joe, good afternoon.
Hello there.
Storm Chandra, then, tell us where it has hit and who it's hit the hardest.
Well, it came in from the southwest, and like the previous storm a short while ago, it developed as it travelled. So it crossed the jet stream and exited as a very powerful storm. Now, it's given a lot of rain, obviously, some places seeing 2 inches or more. It's given some very strong winds, those winds gusting at times up to around 70 miles per hour. And you heard on the news there about the school closures for parts of Northern Ireland and the fact there's been some flooding. Now, many people in central and eastern parts of the country will be saying, what on earth is all the fuss about? Not much going on here. Now, it's a very interesting setup, which is going to affect us in the future, because we've got high pressure over Scandinavia. So that's stopping the rain going any further. Usually we'd expect a storm like this to come in and then cross the country and then disappear off towards Norway and Sweden. This one, not so. It's being repelled by this high pressure. So in fact, we'll see the storm leave the eastern side of the country, but then it pushes back up towards the northwest. And herein lies the problem, that over the coming days, we'll see further systems coming in from the southwest, all following that same track and all bringing further rain. And some parts of the country down in the southwest have seen something like 150% of their rainfall for winter. So we're looking at an awful lot of wet weather. Of course, the ground is saturated already, so any further rain is likely to cause flooding. And the wind direction means we're seeing quite the strongest rainfall, the heaviest rainfall over the hills, which then, of course, starts to run down, and that adds to the flood problems. So I don't think we're out of the woods yet. Interestingly as well, we've got cold air up towards the north and the east. And to give you some idea of how rapidly those temperatures fall across the country, parts of North Wales have got temperatures today of 12 degrees Celsius. But in Leek, in Derbyshire, not that far away, temperatures are just 4. And that's the same across the north and the east. And that's why we've seen this rain, as it's travelled its way northwards, give some snow over the higher ground. So it affected the South Pennines earlier today. Now the North Pennines, much of Scotland is seeing snow. Virtually anywhere where you get high ground, this is likely to fall as snow rather than rain. So it has been another multi-hazard event, but obviously the southwestern areas are those hit hardest.
Yeah, it sounds as though the conditions mean flooding is going to then be exacerbated in the next few days.
It will. Yeah, that is the problem with flooding. It's not always just what falls out of the sky at the time. Obviously, you get bad driving conditions with a lot of surface water and spray. But then when you start to get the runoff, that's when it starts to go into the rivers. It tries to go into the land, finds it can't. It collects in areas. Then, of course, eventually it makes its way down to the rivers and, any water course, really, that it needs to dissipate.
When is the let up in the weather, which means conditions might improve?
Well, that is the problem. This blocking high over Scandinavia doesn't seem to move very much, which means we will continue to see systems coming in from the Atlantic, most likely taking that southwestern course. It runs into the high pressure and gets deflected back out into the Atlantic. So until that blocking high goes, can't really see much changing.
This storm is Storm Chandra. We've just had Storm Goretti. This is sort of some non-serious storm-related question, Joe. I thought storms were named alphabetically.
They are. They are. I can't think why you're wondering this. Right, Goretti was named by, it was either the Portuguese or the Spanish, on the basis that the storm hit them hardest. It was explained to me by my colleague that said, the people that get to name the storm are those that blink first. And on that occasion, that was them. We've also got Storm Harry, which is over central parts of the Mediterranean. Massive fund has just been pledged to for the cleanup operation there. That's been devastating. Again, not our storm. This one was, is. So this one, Chandra, is C. The next one will begin with D for us. But yeah, naming the storms was supposed to make it simpler. And it doesn't when we start taking on board everybody else's storms. And of course, they've all got different names.
Yeah, Joe, I heard a theory, I don't know if you've heard anything similar, that actually a storm is potentially more dangerous if it is given a female name because people don't take it as seriously.
I haven't heard that, but I can believe it.
Or with hurricanes as well. Hurricane Katrina doesn't sound as terrible as, say, I don't know, I don't want to pick a Storm
Ivan.
Boris. Let's say
yeah,
Ivan.
Hurricane yeah, exactly. Ivan, wasn't there?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. A theory for you to investigate maybe for next time. Joe, thank you very much. Joe Wheeler, the meteorologist at Square Raindrop. Away from the humour to actually really what has been quite serious, if you were stuck in the midst of this, listening to that conversation is Councillor Vicky Johns, the Mayor of Ottery, St Mary Town Council, who joins us. Vicky, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you? Thank you for having me.
I am well. I'm sure better than you are today. Can you just introduce us to anyone who doesn't know to Ottery and tell us about this place and the impact over the last couple of days?
So Ottery St Mary is a small town in East Devon, not too far from Exeter. Famous for its tar barrels, its flaming tar barrels, internationally famous for its tar barrels, and an absolutely fantastic town with a wonderful community, which has sadly, particularly over the last 12, 15 hours, been affected by the recent rains that we've been having, for want of a better phrase. We've had lots of localised flooding, closing off a lot of the roads and sadly affecting some of the properties as well and the residents.
How best were you able to prepare for this?
So the Environment Agency will send out a warning to those that are registered advising them. The Town Council put it up on their website and on their pages, etc. The District Council does the same, warning people. And to be honest with you, the majority of people that live near the river are aware that if it's been raining for a period of time or it's exceptionally heavy rain, but you can only prepare so much. And if you're one of those people that unfortunately lives within that area, and this was probably, we've been advised that it's been the highest water level for a number of years, probably since about 2000, maybe 2008. So a lot of properties that wouldn't have been affected previously have been affected this time, sadly. Mm. And as I said, one of the biggest issues is that the roads getting in and out of the towns, and Ottery Parish covers places like Ottery St Mary, Tipton, Fenny Bridges, etc.
And what are the current state of those properties that have been affected?
So I'm aware of a few properties in Fenny Bridges that have been affected, that unfortunately the residents woke up in the middle of the night, early hours of the morning, came downstairs to find that their downstairs was underwater. And anybody that's ever been flooded is aware that it's not clean water, unfortunately, that comes through the properties. I'm also aware of numerous properties in Tipton that have been affected. And obviously the cleanup, unfortunately, it's one of those things that once you start cleaning up, you have to wait for the water to subside before you can actually start doing anything. Then you have to get dehumidifiers in. It's a long, drawn-out process.
And presumably that can't start yet.
No, not until everything's stopped. And even then, once the water's gone back down, we are actually due more rain this evening and over the next couple of days. So obviously that's going to make people very anxious and very on edge. And the unfortunate thing with something like flooding is also the mental trauma that people go through, because even once you've cleared it all, the insurance has paid out, you've managed to get things back to normal, every time it rains again, you have that foreboding at the back of your mind that the same thing could happen again.
Yeah, and we know that Ottery St Mary's Primary School has had to close, like many others across the country, several hundred actually in Northern Ireland. What provisions is happening there for those children?
So my understanding is, and I'm very grateful to the head teachers of all the local schools that made the decision very early this morning to close their doors, not just for the safety of their pupils, but also for the safety of the teachers and the staff getting to and from. Because it's all right to turn around and say, well, you know what people are like. They go, oh, in the UK, they close because there's a couple of drops of rain. But actually, the safety of getting staff and pupils and the parents to and from these locations, bearing in mind that we are a rural town, should always be utmost and paramount in the head teachers' minds. And again, they've proven that that is exactly how they do these things. That's how they perceive it. They close the schools as soon as they could to keep everybody safe. I've been downtown into Ottery today, and there's a lot of children enjoying having a little bit more family time with their parents, because obviously the parents, children are supposed to be at school, so they've had to take time off their busy schedules, etc., to look after the children during the day. Looking at the river, etc., from a safe distance, I will put that, from a safe distance. But yeah, I'm very grateful to the schools for closing very promptly this morning and advising people not to travel. Devon and Cornwall Police have been advising people not to travel unless it's absolutely essential, because I don't know if you're aware of this, but Devon has the largest stretch of road network in the UK. And unfortunately, that means that we also have the largest amount of potholes in the UK. And if they're underwater, you've got no chance of seeing them.
Yeah, of course. So many different things to be worried about. What kind of support then? If you are one of those residents who found your ground floor underwater, what support is there for them?
So obviously the first port of call is that they need to make sure that they're safe, that all the electrics are turned off, the gas is turned off, anything personal that, is taken out of that area. And then obviously they can get in touch with the local district council, which I'm also a member of, the local district council. They can get in touch with them to see what assistance can be provided by the district council. If there was an incident, for example, certain places they have where they need to be evacuated. I'm sure that you heard last week there was a bomb in Exmouth, a World War II bomb in Exmouth, and lots of places were evacuated. East Devon District Council put forward an emergency plan where if people have to be evacuated for any particular reason, that plan is then put into play. They had that in Exmouth last week. We haven't needed it for Ottery yet, but obviously that depends on how much rain we get in the next couple of days. But if something like that happened, that plan would be put into place. East Devon District Council liaise with the police, etc., and the town council, and numerous volunteers, and that sort of thing's put into play. And obviously people would be advised of that.
And we will be sending as many well wishes as we possibly can. Vicky, thank you. The councillor, Vicky Johns, the mayor of Ottery St Mary Town Council, on really how everyone is having to rally together after that horrible anxiety, and more anxiety on the way, as Joe told us earlier, more rain is forecast.
And you will hear all of that throughout the evening and the night on Times Radio. Some breaking news for you now, though. The government has announced details of its support package for pubs. So pubs will get a 15% cut to new business rates bills from April, followed by a 2-year real term freeze. There will also be a review into the method used to value them for business rates. Ministers say the support will be worth £1,650 for the average pub, and these rules will also apply to music venues. John Pienaar will have more on this story in Drive. Is it a U-turn? Is it a three-point turn? It's definitely a turn in a different direction, isn't it? Thank you for all of your messages so far this afternoon. Martin just wants to say, lovely Ottery St Mary. As a boy, I holidayed in Ottery over 70 years ago. And this one comes in from Elizabeth, who is one of our international listeners. It's on a completely different topic, Rosie. Here we go. I thought you might like a change of pace with some news from here in Switzerland. I live in a small town in the Jura Mountains, and last night at 3 a.m, the entire town was awoken by a huge explosion. It was four thieves who blew up the cash machine in the old town and escaped with the contents. It's the third cash machine explosion in 6 months. Huge debate as to whether CCTV would help, but I've got a question for your listeners. Does this happen anywhere else? It seems very Brinksmat from the 1980s. Well, we'll put that out to you all. 0333 003 2353. It's happened in a canton. Does it happen near you? Coming up, why is the NHS running out of batteries? It's an extraordinary story, actually. And if you use hearing aids that need batteries, it is absolutely one for you. It's just gone 3:15. It's Fee Glover and Rosie Wright, or Two Indiscriminate Women, on Times Radio with Wickes, the experts in kitchens and bathrooms.
The Evening Edition with Kate Borsay on Times Radio, hosting an honest conversation about current affairs, well-being, lifestyle, health and wealth. Plus, don't miss Tomorrow's Home, highlighting how you can make your house more energy efficient. The Evening Edition with Kate Borsay, tonight from 7 on Times Radio. With the UK government's boiler upgrade scheme, you could upgrade your heating with a £7,500 heat pump grant. Visit gov.uk/cleanenergy to check eligibility.
Listen to Times Radio on your smart speaker. Just say, play Times Radio.
It turns out you can please all of the people, all of the time. Garden games for the kids, a separate cottage for the grandparents, a private chef for that special occasion. Simpson Travel, idyllic Mediterranean holidays that everyone will love. We take care of the details so you can enjoy the moment. SimpsonTravel.com, because your time is precious.
Everything you know and love starts with water. Your dog, your car, your internet. And then there is just the small miracle of keeping us alive. Without drinking water, you wouldn't survive more than 3 days. So let's raise a glass to clean water. It's hard to imagine life without it. Seriously, how is it that a million people die every year because they lack access to clean water? That's not just unthinkable, that's wrong. Donate to WaterAid today. Just £2 a month can give life-changing clean water.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker, this is Times Radio.
So is somebody blowing up cash machines in your area? Elizabeth would like to know, to make a comparison between what's happening in Switzerland, what's happening in the rest of the world. And there is something a little bit Brinks Matt about it all. We're going to talk health stories up until 3 o'clock. The UK has lost its measles elimination status from the World Health Organization after a jump in infections across Europe. Let's talk about this and all the other stories with Dr. Rachel Ward. What does elimination status give us and what does it really mean?
Good afternoon. Yes, so we reached elimination status in 2021 to 2023, and this really meant that we had reached an adequate amount of vaccination, which meant that we were not seeing rates of transmission of the measles virus, of the measles disease. But since then, we have seen a real issue with vaccinating children. With MMR, we know that last year, only 83.7% of five-year-olds had had both MMR doses, and we need to be aiming for 95% to get that real herd immunity. And so then, unsurprisingly, in turn, you know, last year we saw 3,681 cases of measles, which is just incredible when you think, you know, we went for so long where we hardly saw it. So we are, you know, that explains why we are no longer classed as a country which has eliminated it.
And what does that mean in terms of, you know, what we might be able to access, the kind of the state of emergency we might find ourselves in? What's the kind of feedback to the normal person?
Yeah, so we're not the only country that's experienced this. So Spain and Austria are also in the same boat, interestingly. I think some other countries as well. And it's really about a warning shot. You know, this is a very serious situation that we need to improve our vaccination rate. Now, there's obviously been another big change, though. So since January, our MMR vaccine has now become the MMRV vaccine. And this also covers you for chickenpox, for varicella. I think this is going to be a very, very interesting time, because I really think that people will want to vaccinate their children for chickenpox, because it is such an unpleasant disease. So I feel very hopeful that this could be the thing that will turn our vaccination rates around. But, you know, watch this space. I hope so.
Sure. Could you have the chickenpox vaccination without having the others, or is it all in one?
So currently not via the NHS, we are offering a combined vaccine. You will, I would imagine, continue to be able to access a chickenpox vaccine privately, which has been around for some time.
OK, well, we will definitely keep our eyes across this story. We're very pro-vaccination on this programme. Dr. Ward, I know that you're very pro-vaccination. Nobody would want their child to get measles in particular, would they? It is a horrendous and life-threatening disease.
Absolutely. It's very serious. And I think it's one of those diseases that we haven't seen around. And so, unfortunately, we can get quite flippant about it.
Yep. Let's talk about people who are turning up to get their hearing aids at NHS facilities expecting to be given batteries for them. Now, there is a battery shortage in the NHS. Can this be true?
It is. So there has been a problem with supply of certain hearing aid batteries since November. It is predicted to go on until the middle of March. And as a result of this, so people generally get their hearing aid batteries from audiology departments in hospitals or some GP centres and a few other locations. They've basically had to limit how many packs that they can give people. So in some places, they will only give them one pack per week. And that will, on average, last people 5 to 14 days. But of course, for some people, the kind of logistics of going up to a big hospital and, you know, trying to do that every week, because, you know, there is a correlation between poor hearing and age. That's really challenging. And so some people have been kind of rationing how much they've used their hearing aids so they don't have to go and get batteries as much. So it can have a huge impact on people. We know that hearing loss has many problems on, you know, social isolation, mental health, cognitive function. So having this prolonged impact can be very serious. It's particularly a battery which is produced by Energizer. Look, I don't know the details of why it is that we, you know, have we got a deal as the NHS with this provider? Can we use other batteries? Are we kind of locked in a deal with this provider? I don't know. But this does happen occasionally when we have a kind of monopoly from a large provider and there is a problem with supply and the outcomes can be serious.
Sure. So in extremis, people would be able to buy these batteries somewhere else.
Well, I presume so. But I think the problem is always when it is a genuine supply problem, you often then can't get them anywhere. You know, so it's a bit like, you know, when we have drug shortages, we've had about a year or two ago, we had HRT shortages. Then we had a big shortage last year of ADHD medication. It wasn't that you could just go and buy it. It was a genuine shortage. So, you know, I suspect there will be issues with that as well, unless there are some providers which have built up stock.
Okay. And it does sound like a story, you know, from the 1970s, doesn't it? I think it's a little bit outrageous, actually, that it's happened in 2026. We're going to turn our attention to something completely different for our final topic, Rachel, and that's this study showing that women could be at higher risk of dementia because they lose grey matter during the menopause. Tell us a bit more about what grey matter actually is.
In our brain, we have grey matter and white matter, and it basically delineates which part of the nerve cell lies where. Both are very important. So the background is that 2/3 of people with Alzheimer's in the UK are women. But we don't fully understand what it is that means that women are at greater risk of developing Alzheimer's. So this is a large study. It's come out in Psychological Medicine, and it looked at data from 125,000 participants in the UK Biobank, which is an incredible data source. And basically, they were looking at aspects of menopause, HRT use, mental health problems and brain function. And they found several things. So they have found that menopause certainly is associated with an increase occurrence of things like anxiety, depression, insomnia. You know, I think we kind of already knew that, but it's certainly been proven in this large scale study. But it also showed actually that people who take HRT seem to have more significant mental health problems. And they drew a conclusion looking at, you know, particular cohort that actually probably the reason was that if you had bigger impact on your mental health, you were more likely to start HRT. So it was a pre-existing problem, if you like. But they also then looked at the actual brain and they found that after menopause, certain parts of your brain had got smaller, they'd shrunk, and particularly the medial temporal lobe. And that's really important in learning things and memory function. and also the anterior cingulate cortex. And that's really important in attention and regulation of emotion. But what was also really interesting is that the people that had the lowest volume were actually the group taking HRT.
Right.
Now, we cannot draw causative links from this. That does not mean that HRT is bad for your brain. Absolutely not. It just shows us that there is something going on with our brain during menopause. We don't know if this is, you know, the link that makes us more likely to get dementia. And we don't really fully understand the part that HRT plays. I think yet again, this shows us that the menopause has a huge impact on our bodies, our brain and our function. And we desperately just need to continue to have more research in this area to understand it.
Yes, we certainly do, Rachel. I mean, it's half the population, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I'm sure that you are as fed up as I am of talking about this, where we have to say there hasn't been enough research. And do you believe that now that will change?
I think so. I think the challenge is, yes, you're absolutely right, it's half of the population and we should not be in this situation. But what often happens is that there are so many people lobbying for various groups with different diseases, wanting, you know, different research and funding and input into, you know, deadly diseases and things. And often things like menopause therefore get a bit sidelined.
Sure.
Because it's not seen with the same severity. And I think at the moment, when there is definitely issues with getting adequate funding into research, people want to see that they're going to get a good outcome. And that might mean, for example, development of a new drug. And so it gets very complicated, and often it's these kind of health issues that then don't reach those really big research projects.
I'm sure that we will talk about the menopause again, Rachel. Thank you very much indeed for your time this afternoon. That's Dr. Rachel Ward, who is a GP co-host of the Pharmacy Podcast. Many of you who have real life experience of hearing aids and the need for batteries are saying that you can go and buy the batteries that you need, probably from your local pharmacy. You'd certainly be able to get them from Boots, and a pack can last you 6 to 8 weeks. So don't panic, everybody.
We've also had a couple of examples of other stolen cash machines.
Yes.
So they come up in the next hour.
Across the UK, on DAB digital radio, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
It is now 3 o'clock. This is Rosie Wright and Fee Glover keeping you company for the next hour. Coming up, we'll go to Minneapolis as federal agents are set to be pulled out. Also, what's to become of climate efforts as the US now, for the second time, step away from the Paris Climate Accord? Also, we'll be hearing from the Yorkshire Shepherdess in half an hour's time. That's Amanda Owen, who has 9 children and a full-time farm to run. All of that to come, but next, let's get the very latest news with Will Hobbs.
Thank you, Rosie. Good afternoon. A report from the Civitas think tank has warned the United States is no longer a reliable ally, and Britain must make an immediate transition to war readiness if it's to protect its democracy. It says the security guarantee the US has provided for 7 decades is no longer valid because President Trump has put America's commitment to defend Europe in doubt, and the international rules-based order is effectively dead. The report was written by the MPs, Sir Bernard Jenkin and Derek Twigg, and the former senior NATO adviser, Chris Donnelly. Meanwhile, the European Union and India have signed a trade agreement billed as the largest ever concluded by either side, and a repudiation of President Trump's protectionist policies. The European Commission President, Ursula von der Leyen, hailed the agreement to end $4 billion worth of tariffs as a signal to the world that rules-based cooperation still delivers great outcomes. In the last hour, Matt Goodwin has been announced as Reform UK's candidate in the upcoming Gorton and Denton by-election. He's a political commentator and honorary president of the party's student wing. Mr. Goodwin had this message for the Prime Minister. Apologies. It's become a much talked about seat after the Mayor of Greater Manchester, Andy Burnham, was blocked from standing for Labour by Labour. Former Labour adviser Kevin Meagher believes Matt Goodwin is an astute choice.
Very articulate guy, very smart guy. I don't agree with him on everything, But I've got a lot of respect for him. I think he'll be a very strong candidate. I mean, I don't necessarily think it's going to be the kind of deal breaker that pushes this into a reform victory. I think this is still very, very close.
We can now hear Mr. Goodwin's message for Keir Starmer.
This by-election is a referendum on Keir Starmer. It's a chance for the hard-working, law-abiding, tax-paying people from this seat to have their say on Keir Starmer and to make political history.
Meanwhile, a former Labour MP has been charged with sexually assaulting a woman in 2022. 41-year-old Conor McGinn was due to appear at Westminster Magistrates Court today to face one count of sexual assault. McGinn of Lambeth, South London, was MP for St Helens North from 2015 until he stood down at the 2024 election. Minnesota's chief judge has ordered the head of ICE to appear in court this week. Chief Judge Patrick J. Schiltz says the Trump administration failed to comply with orders to hold hearings for detained immigrants. Todd Lyons, the acting director of ICE, must appear personally on Friday. The mayor of Minneapolis revealed earlier that the Trump administration is preparing to pull federal agents out of the city. And the daughter of deceased footballer Gordon McQueen has called for professional footballers to have a brain scan before the start of every season to check for possible injuries. It's after a coroner ruled that heading the ball was a likely factor in the former Manchester United and Scotland star developing dementia. His daughter Hayley, who's a Sky Sports presenter, has told Times Radio the required resources are there.
If you were to scan a footballer at the start of every season, almost like having a full medical, why not? There's enough money in football. Okay, there should be a fund, in my opinion, to help with that. I don't know what you can see on a brain scan, but if it's possible, then, oh my goodness, why wouldn't you do that? That does seem literally like a no-brainer.
And remember, the finest writers from The Times preview and review the week's football on The Game podcast.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, on the free Times Radio app, online, and on your smart speaker. Afternoons on Times Radio with Wix, kitchens and bathrooms.
It is 4 minutes past three. Just to be clear, it's Rosie Wright and Fee Glover with you today. Martin has also spotted that on the app. Don't worry, we're all okay. No egos have been damaged in the making of today's schedule. But yeah, it is Fee and Rosie with you until four. Now, it's not just a problem in Switzerland. All across Oxfordshire, cash machines have been stolen overnight. And obviously, there'll be lots of cash machines that have been damaged in other parts of the country. But our listeners are focusing on Woodstock, where a gang of thieves were sentenced to a total of 92 years in jail for robbing a cash point there. And Kirsty says, regarding the bank robbery in Switzerland, not an explosion, but a few years ago when I worked in Kingston Bagpuis, it's just one of the most fantastic names of a place. Is it Bagpuis? Is it Bagpuis?
I think it's Bagpuis.
Poos.
I think, but only because I Googled it in the news. I'm okay. Not sure.
Right, we've given you all the options there. I hope you're okay. The local co-op supermarket cash machine was ram-raided with a stolen JCB digger in the middle of the night. It was quite a shocking sight the following morning. The entire front wall demolished, digger abandoned in the car park, and the cash machine was never replaced. And in fact, Elizabeth did give us a little bit more detail as to what had happened in Switzerland.
Yes, she said, I live in a small town in the Jura Mountains. And when the town had been awoken by this huge explosion, she said it was next door to a boulangerie. The bakers were already hard at work. So you'd think, aha, they were kind of caught in the action. The boulanger said he heard an almighty bang, saw dust, went to look, saw someone helping themselves to the cash machine money, but returned to work because, quoting, we had a lot to do before the bakery could open in the morning. I did ring the police, but obviously they were in bed, so it took a while to come.
Ah, yeah, bread's important.
It almost feels like I have it in France with that sort of attitude. There we go.
We are 0333 003 2353 this afternoon. Many thoughts about hearing aid batteries. We will try and squeeze those in on the programme as well. And a very quick one from Sophie, who says, bearing in mind that women are 50% of the population, I think more menopause research would be money well spent, especially as we're trying to get more older women into employment or at least staying in employment. And It's a point that we just can't make often enough. If you look at the statistics of the number of women who do leave the workforce because they just feel overwhelmed by menopause symptoms, it's a good thing that we can talk about it now. It doesn't mean it happens to every single woman, but there must be a whole generation of women who look back and think, I really wish that there'd been more research available, there'd been more help available. I would like to have stayed in my job.
It's 7 minutes past three now. Donald Trump is preparing to pull federal agents out of the city of Minneapolis. The White House is facing outrage on both sides of the political divide after a second fatal shooting by immigration officers. The Border Patrol commander, Greg Bovino, has become a lightning rod for anger due to his comments like these that he made on CNN over the weekend.
The situations are chaotic and ever-changing. Follow directions of, for law enforcement. Don't inject yourself knowingly beforehand into a law enforcement situation.
With respect, it feels as though in some ways you're blaming the victim here.
The victims are the Border Patrol agents. I'm not blaming the Border Patrol agents. The victim are the Border Patrol agents. The suspect put himself in that situation. The victims are the Border Patrol agents there.
So Greg Bovino not identifying Alex Peretti, the intensive care nurse who was killed as the victim. And that sound you could hear in the background was CNN were playing those very traumatic videos at the same time as the interviews. So that's what you could hear. Well, Greg Bovino is expected to be among those leaving the city today. There are some reports that his access to official social media channels have been revoked. We're going to talk about this in more detail. Jacob Thomas is a Minneapolis resident. He's also the communications director of the campaign group Common Defence, which organises veterans for progressive causes, and joins us. Hello, Jacob.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me. I wish it was under better circumstances.
Of course. We're hearing these reports then of a pullout by ICE. Have you seen anything of that effect yet on the streets?
I mean, it's very early here. It's 9 a.m. here, so we haven't seen anything major happen yet, as kind of has been reported. It sounds like Greg Bovino and some agents are going to be leaving today. But I want to be clear, this isn't an issue of, great, now there's a few less. What Minneapolis, what Minnesotans are demanding, what Common Defense and veterans across this country are demanding, is an end to all ICE operations, that every single ICE agent, Border Patrol agent leaves our city and stops this unjust occupation, and that we actually take steps to investigate and prosecute the people who have been enabling this for months. That has led to not just the two killings, two murders here in Minnesota, but we've seen deaths and so many other constitutional rights violations across the country in ICE detainment as well. So all of that needs to be addressed. A couple of them leaving and Greg Bovino being run out of town is not the end, and it is not justice for too many people.
And at this point, you say it's early and we don't actually know. We're expecting them to be pulled out, but we don't have confirmation of that.
Yeah.
Can you tell us what your plans are today, or the other people who've been protesting against the ICE agents?
Yeah, it's a little cold here. I don't know if people understand the weather here in Minnesota, but it's very cold. But we are still going to be out in the streets, both doing protests and rallies. There's at least one at the Minnesota State Capitol here at noon inside, and there's a one at 5:30 p.m. here, 17:30 our time out nearby as well. So we're going to still be out here. And that's just the rallies and protests pieces of this. What we're also seeing is community members and neighbors joining together to help make sure that, you know, the schools have, you know, sort of protection from these mass federal agents. We've seen our communities come together in just beautiful, beautiful ways to protect each other with our whistles. While they have guns and, you know, chemical grenades. So we're still going to be doing all that. And I think we will do that until all 3,000 of these mass federal agents leave our city and go back to their own homes and take care of their own business and get out of ours.
Have you at any point feared for your own safety demonstrating?
I think it's one of those things that is now just a constant piece that every single person has to, you know, take into consideration and be concerned with. But I want to acknowledge too, as a white man who, you know, is usually running around at these protests or doing these kinds of block patrols in a veteran hat, it's usually a lot safer for me to do that than it is for our neighbors of color or people with accents, because that's exactly who they're targeting for no justified reasons. And we've seen that. So I think, of course, there's always that concern of safety. I am probably not one of the ones that needs to be as concerned as much as some of our other neighbors, because they're the ones being targeted and harassed in just so much more despicable ways. But as we saw, you know, it doesn't matter who you are or what you look like when you are trying to protect your neighbors from this authoritarian occupation, that is going to potentially end badly no matter what.
If you could hold right there, Jacob, I'm going to bring into the conversation Patricia Lopez, a Bloomberg columnist, former member of the Minneapolis Star Tribune editorial board. And just as a reminder, if for you listening, that ICE is the US law enforcement agency that have been taking the lead on carrying out Trump's administration's mass deportations initiative. But over the last 3 weeks, two people, Americans, have been killed by those ICE agents. Patricia, the big kind of wider political question here is, has Trump completely lost control of his ICE crackdown initiative?
Yes, I would say he has. Operation Metro Surge has been an unmitigated disaster, starting with the death, the shooting death of Renee Good, and, you know, the seizure of a 5-year-old boy, Liam Conejo Ramos, who is still in a detention facility in somewhere in Texas, and now with the death of Alex Pretty, and so many more incidents in between. Yes, I would say he's lost control. And the best evidence of that is that he has removed Greg Bovino. That's just a start. But he has brought in, more importantly, Tom Homan, who earlier had advocated for an approach that centered more specifically on dangerous convicted criminals. And that was probably the right approach to begin with. He lost out on that because Stephen Miller and Kristi Noem and others and the president himself were pushing for quotas. They wanted more numbers. They wanted higher numbers. And that approach that Tom Homan was using was unable to produce that. And so now we have seen what has happened now, and it's just it's not working.
What we have seen is a complete clash as well from the video evidence that is being created by the protesters, yes, who've basically decided to use actually our most powerful tool is a dash cam or a camera or my phone camera against what we've been hearing from the Trump administration about what the ICE agents have actually been doing and the justification for it. In some ways, it has been totally abhorrent and tragic what's happened, but the protesters' strategy of filming everything has been something that may now be their biggest weapon in fixing this.
It has caught the administration in lie after lie after lie, and there is just no way that Secretary Noem could have any credibility left after she immediately calls both Good and Pretty domestic terrorists. And you can see from the video that they were nothing of the sort. Pretty was attempting to help a woman up and was viciously attacked. Then they hold up the fact that he had a gun. Well, half the households in Minnesota have guns. They are licensed to carry firearms, and a number of them have concealed carry permits. So what he was doing was completely legal at the time.
Yeah. As we've discussed, and there's sort of so many different angles of exactly what happened in that case of Alex Peretti. A development today, the head of ICE has been ordered to appear in a Minnesota court to explain why he isn't holding hearings for detained migrants. It does suggest, Patricia, that there are some legal problems coming down the track for ICE.
Well, they have a track record, unfortunately, despite all of the funding that they got in the One Big Beautiful Bill. They have been firing wave after wave of immigration judges. So really, they have put themselves in a position where now it's almost impossible for them to provide this due process. So it really is a problem of their own making. They don't lack for funds at all to hire all the immigration judges they need.
Yeah. What the wider context to this, Patricia? Immigration, control of immigration actually had been a very positive story for President Trump until about a month ago, particularly what he'd achieved on the southern border. It is now surely not the case that President Trump's biggest asset is now something the Democrats can use against him and has become such a toxic story. I wonder what this is doing to Donald Trump's popularity and poll rating.
Well, I think you can see his poll numbers are declining, particularly on immigration, particularly with independents. Republicans are still with him, although not as much as they were before. And more importantly, you're seeing Republican lawmakers starting to back away. They're well aware of the midterm elections coming up, and the position they're in is just untenable. I mean, these were not two immigrants that were shot. These were two white American U.S.-born citizens. And it becomes much easier at that point for the average American to look and say, that looks just like me. That could be me.
Yeah, you've got the American federal government firing on American citizens. Patricia, exactly. Thank you. Patricia Lopez, Bloomberg columnist and the former member of the Minneapolis Star Tribune editorial board. And earlier we were hearing from Jacob Thomas, a Minneapolis resident, who's the communications director of the campaign group Common Defense. And what is very clear from what Jacob was saying to us is there is a fundamental break there between the citizens of Minneapolis and the federal government, who are supposed to be in charge and running things. And when that trust is broken, you are then in a very dangerous situation.
Indeed. It is 17 minutes past three. On a lighter note, I suppose, although this does involve crime, I don't think either of us imagined at the beginning of the programme at 2 o'clock we'd be devoting quite so much time to anecdotes about stolen cash machines.
No.
But we have our correspondent, Agent Switzerland, that's Elizabeth, who brought this to our attention. And this comes in from Jonathan, who says, a Group 4 work colleague, and that is a nod to our collective past, Jonathan, isn't it, told me of an assignment they got some years ago from a certain high street bank. Unfortunately, the bank had mixed up the date of when the ATM was to be removed and the date the whole building was due to be demolished. The poor security guard spent the night standing next to an ATM full of money, sitting on top of a pile of rubbish. Jonathan's from Cookham. This one comes in from Annette, who says, I've just heard your piece about the Swiss bank explosion. It made me laugh because about 15 years ago, I was living in a little village just outside Geneva. We had one bank with a sort of glass cubicle attached to it with a bank machine ATM in it. And one night, in the middle of the night, a lorry deliberately backed into the kiosk, wrapped a chain around it, attached to the lorry, and they drove off. But they hadn't worked out how they were going to then get the very heavy machine onto the back of the lorry. So whilst they were trying to work that out, the police arrived and they were busted. More of those would be absolutely delightful. I don't know how many more cash machine anecdotes we can squeeze in before 4 o'clock, but we're very happy to be ambitious and give it a go. We're 0333 003 2353. We're going to talk about climate change next. You're listening to Fee Glover, so hang on to yourselves. And Rosie Wright on Times Radio with Wix. The kitchen and bathroom sale is now on. Explore all the sale offers at wix.co.uk, or you can visit your local Wix store.
John Pienaar on Times Radio, telling the stories that matter.
How do you rate the seriousness of this situation? Because there have been upsets on the route to this point.
Expert analysis and well-informed discussion.
Half the population are women. It's astonishing that medical misogyny, it persists.
Trusted journalism and diverse opinion.
With the idea that you need to do it now and hope you don't have to do it again.
John Pienaar at Drive, this afternoon from 4 on Times Radio.
If you could sail anywhere in the world, where would you go? With Oceania Cruises, our small, luxurious ships allow us to dock in boutique ports in 600 stunning destinations. We offer a more immersive experience and a personalized service, creating unique travel memories. From the Caribbean to the Mediterranean and the finest cuisine at sea, it can only be Oceania Cruises. Visit oceaniacruises.com or your travel agent.
Here's the truth about AI. AI is only as powerful as the platform it's built into. ServiceNow puts AI to work for people across your business, removing friction and frustration for your employees, supercharging productivity for your developers, providing intelligent tools for your service agents to make customers happier. All built into a single platform you can use right now. That's why the world works with ServiceNow. Visit servicenow.com/UK/AI for people.
Download the free Times Radio app from the App Store or Google Play today.
Afternoons on Times Radio with Wix, the experts in bathrooms. From a shiny new tap to a full bathroom renovation, Wix has everything you need for every style of home. Browse thousands of bathroom products at wix.co.uk.
Now, the United States formally exits the Paris Climate Agreement today for the second time under Donald Trump's leadership. The US president called climate change the greatest con job ever perpetrated on the world in a speech to the UN last year. He exited the agreement in his first term as well, before Joe Biden brought the US back in. Well, let's talk now to John Holdren, who is a Harvard professor and the former science advisor to the Obama White House. Mr. Holdren, a very good afternoon from us in London, and thank you very much indeed for talking to us today. Can you
thank you.
Put,
happy to be here.
Sorry, I didn't allow you to be polite, and you've just been lovely and polite. What difference does a second withdrawal make? Wasn't the impact actually just in the first?
Well, first of all, Trump has consolidated his support in the people around him to a degree that there is no one left who can challenge the stupidities that he continually engages in. And the first time when he departed from the Paris Agreement, there was a very strong movement called We're Still In the United States, where thousands of businesses, hundreds of universities, hundreds of cities, and half of the 50 states declared that they remained committed to meeting the obligations that the United States had made in Paris. There is a semblance of that today, but it is much weaker than it was before. And Trump has been much more aggressive, without any constraints on him in the White House, in dismantling United States efforts to take sensible actions to abate climate change.
Why has that movement become weaker?
I think Trump has succeeded in this second round in intimidating businesses, in intimidating law firms, in intimidating universities, in intimidating foundations, even intimidating museums and libraries, to the point that the whole underpinning of independent action and independent opinion is being eroded in the United States. And that really is the ultimate threat that Trump is posing. He is systematically attacking all the domestic and, to the extent he can, the international sources of data, of factual analysis, of fact-based policy recommendations, indeed attacking all the sources of independent opinion. And that is devastating. It has been devastating. And unless a way is found to rein Trump and his minions in, the situation will continue to deteriorate.
Could it also not be, though, Mr. Holdren, that an awful lot of businesses have thought, actually, we cannot afford to do this anymore. We cannot afford to take the personal hit that going greener might need?
Some businesses certainly have had that concern and have taken that position. But up until the second Trump term, a very substantial fraction of American business was looking at climate change not just as a challenge, but as an opportunity. And in fact, the demolition of U.S. efforts to address climate change is going to damage U.S. competitiveness internationally. It's going to turn over international markets in clean energy and energy efficiency to our competitors. It is going to weaken public health. It is going to weaken farms, forests, and fisheries, private and public property, and ultimately national security. So the idea that it's too expensive to deal with climate change is a serious misconception. The reality is it's too expensive not to deal with it in virtually every respect that we care about.
Sure. But I mean, you understand these problems better than most, Mr. Holdren. I mean, one is a problem that is absolutely right in front of you for many people. That is literally their energy bill every month, whether or not they can afford an EV, whether or not they can afford a heat pump, whether or not they want to make changes to their life, and then something that is in the long view, isn't it, which they feel that they have very, very little control over. And President Trump is not alone in choosing to serve the thing that is closest to him, not the thing that's in the distance.
Now, that's always been a dilemma, the dilemma between the short term and the long term. But the reality that has changed very much in the last 10 years or so is that the solutions to climate change, including especially renewable energy, have become markedly less expensive, to the point that they're now less expensive than coal, they're less expensive than nuclear energy. And so to the extent that there is, in fact, a solution to Trump's incursions into sensible climate policy, it is that the market is going to continue to work, at least in many places, and people are going to continue to choose to get their energy in cleaner ways because the cleaner ways are also cheaper. There was just an article the other day in one of the major U.S. papers, it was in the New York Times, I believe, saying that Trump's actions on EVs alone were going to cost Detroit $25 billion in the next year because of reduced competitiveness of the U.S. automobile industry.
Okay. So, I mean, these are quite complex arguments, aren't they, that we are expected to take on board. And I wonder whether I can just challenge you on what was achieved during the time at which you were an advisor in the Obama White House, because you talk about finding cleaner ways to bring cheaper energy to Americans. And I suppose the logic would be that if an administration can manage to do that, then they don't turn against the sheer notion of climate change affecting them, do they?
No, certainly not. one of the common misconceptions, though, excuse me, is that government controls everything. And in fact, the government's sway over the economy, while considerable, is not complete. And presidents tend to get blamed for what goes wrong and get credit for what goes right in the economy, but there are many other factors at work. In the Obama administration, we actually got quite a lot done, but less than we wanted to get done because of constraints, both in the financial domain, in the limits placed on government spending, which limited our ability to invest as required in the development of cleaner energy options. But we still managed to get a lot done. And in the Obama administration, the energy intensity of the U.S. economy decreased. That is, it became less and less costly in energy to generate a dollar of gross domestic product. The costs of solar energy fell dramatically. The deployment of wind and solar energy rose dramatically. The use of coal, the dirtiest of the fossil fuels, shrunk dramatically. And we had in place a climate action plan that President Obama put forth in 2013, early in his second term, which would have continued progress on climate change to the point that the United States would have met its commitments under the Paris Agreement.
Yeah. But this reversal, you know, it is at force and at speed. I was interested to read, Professor Holdren, that in exiting the Paris Agreement for the second time, America joins a pretty elite club of Iran, Libya and Yemen. And I wonder why President Trump's detractors don't make more of that.
You know, that is a very interesting question. I think the answer is that Trump is performing so many bizarre incursions into good sense in domestic and international policy that the critics can't keep up. This may, in fact, be part of his strategy. You do so many wild things that it's difficult for the critics to keep a focus on any one.
Flood the zone. Yep. Thank you very much indeed for talking to us this afternoon. We really appreciate your time. John Holdren is a Harvard professor and also the former science advisor to the Obama White House. I'm sorry, that has made us a little late for the news.
That is absolutely fine. Coming up, we're going to be joined by the Yorkshire Shepherdess, Amanda Owen, to hear all about managing a farm, a family, a very large family, and a TV show whilst going through a divorce. But first, let's get a check on the latest headlines now at 3:31 with Will Hobbs.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker, this is Times Radio.
Thank you, Rosie. A report from the Civitas think tank has warned that the United States is no longer a reliable ally and Britain must make an immediate transition to war readiness if it is to protect its democracy. It says the security guarantee that the US has provided for seven decades is no longer valid because President Trump has put America's commitment to defend Europe in doubt and the international rules-based order is effectively dead. The report was written by the MPs Sir Bernard Jenkin and Derek Twigg and the former senior NATO adviser Chris Donnelly. A support package for England's pubs has been announced after backlash over rising business rates.
From April, every pub in England will get 15% off its new business rates bill on top of the support announced at budget. Pubs' bills will then be frozen in real terms for a further 2 years.
Treasury Minister Dan Tomlinson's told MPs pubs on average should save around £1,650 next year. Live music venues were also included in the relief. The industry had warned of closures and job losses after a COVID-era rates discount was scrapped in November's budget. Storm Chandra is battering the UK with blizzard-like conditions in some areas. Cars are submerged in water in Devon and Somerset, while trains and flights are severely disrupted. A former Labour MP has been charged with sexual assault. The allegation against Conor McGinn dates to July 2022, and he will appear in court next month. And don't forget, you can set the Times Radio News Briefing as your flash briefing on Alexa.
This is Times Radio.
I thought I'd seen it all, then felt myself awaken. I thought I'd witnessed beauty before my breath was taken. I thought that I'd known wonder, then sailed beneath these skies. I thought I'd seen the world until I opened my eyes. Change the way you see the world with HX Expeditions. Search Travel HX to discover more.
Get ahead of the news with Kate Borsay from 7pm as she brings you Tomorrow's Times Today. An exclusive look at the stories making tomorrow's headlines.
Local, national, global, there's always an election. And politicians are always thinking about the next one.
The smell of victory is the thing that actually makes it worthwhile.
On How to Win an Election, we've assembled a crack team of strategists who've all been at the top political table for both the good times and the terribly bad.
In the end, that is what a Prime Minister does.
Every week, we answer the big political questions.
Are we living in Morgan McSweeney's government or Keir Starmer's?
Listen to How to Win an Election wherever you get your podcasts.
Afternoons on Times Radio with Wickes. The kitchen and bathroom sale is now on. Let the design and installation experts at Wickes help transform your home. Get started by booking a free kitchen or bathroom design appointment at wickes.co.uk.
Now, Jan, you are our listener of the week and we love you because you said much better to be a bit late for the news than having to cut short a very interesting guest. And it's a funny old thing, isn't it, in radio, that sometimes you have to make a less than interesting guest last a very long time in order to get to a junction. And sometimes we have a big junction that means we do have to cut off interesting guests. And that is the nature of live radio. Doesn't happen if you're doing a podcast, doesn't happen if you're making documentaries, doesn't happen if maybe you've got a couple of hours left to your own devices on YouTube, but it does happen on live radio. So thank you for bearing with us.
You're revealing many of the behind the scenes secrets. I think sometimes you can hear when something's gone wrong, can't you?
I know, very much so. And sometimes, and also because you and I love radio, so we listen to a lot of radio at home, and you can hear when somebody is having to ask three or four questions that they really don't care about the answer in order to just make
to fill up a few minutes
to what we call, Jan, the hard quarterways. Watch out for those.
I wonder if anyone can answer Neil's question. Is it true that if you force a cash machine open, it produces a dye that renders the money inside useless? It would be helpful to know if I ever change profession. We've had an extraordinary, I'm not going to encourage a change in profession, Neil. We've had an extraordinary set of messages that were kicked off by Elizabeth, who was woken up at 3 o'clock in the morning overnight because some robbers stole a cash machine.
Well, I think also that that story about the cash machine then immediately dying, the notes inside it, I think that's an urban myth, like the myth that the water in a municipal swimming pool goes purple if you have a wee in it.
Is that myth going to put off the person who's potentially going to steal a cash machine?
Well, I guess so, because you'd be going to an awful lot of bother to then have all of those notes that you couldn't use. So I don't know.
But we've only really heard of quite a lot of blundered efforts of trying to steal cash points, which suggests quite a lot of planning and preparation hasn't gone into it correctly.
Yes, but also it suggests that Times Radio listeners are not successful criminals who are listening to us whilst counting their lovely winnings somewhere on a Costa. Right, shall we? We do a little bit of an off-air talk-up first. I'm just looking towards the production team and I've got some thumbs up going on. I tell you what, we're really showing our pants today. If you miss the 3:30 interview that goes out every day on this programme, then really, don't worry. Don't have a sleepless night about it, because you can catch up in off-air, the podcast with Jane and Fee that drops around 6 o'clock every day. We talk about lots and lots of different things on the podcast. We're currently talking about whether or not men are really embracing yoga enough. Our 3:30 interviews in full have recently included Maggie O'Farrell and Sally Wainwright. And last week we spoke to Claudia Hammond, psychology lecturer and broadcaster. Now, Claudia has done a lot of work on the study of kindness. And I put it to her that when you look at the strong men around the world at the moment, kindness doesn't really seem to be in vogue.
Kindness is not in fashion at in the wider world, and in a way in the world we see on the news, but there is still loads of individual kindness going on. And if you deliberately try and look out for that, you know, I recommend people become a kindness twitcher, if you like, because in some research at Sussex University that I was part of, we found that those people who were able to spot kindness around them had higher levels of well-being. And you can just watch for it. You know, now, once you start watching, you can't stop. I kept a kindness diary for a while of things I saw, which was things like people helping people with buggies up the steps of the tube, and people helping people, handing things back to people in the street that they'd dropped. And actually, once you start to look out for it, there is loads. And I think that can counter some of the unkindness we see.
Claudia Hammond talking about kindness. And in fact, she came in to talk about her book Overwhelmed, which is basically a psychologist's guide with scientific evidence to how to prevent yourself from feeling completely and utterly swamped by the modern world. It's very practical. It's very sensible. It's very easy to digest. Can you tell? It gets a hard recommend from me.
It sounds it. Do you know, Claudia Hammond was very kind to me when I was 10 years ago finishing off my broadcasting masters, and you had to create a little documentary and I wanted to interview her for it. I pestered and pestered politely via email, via any means I could get hold of her, because she was going to sort of be the linchpin I needed in the case I was trying to make. And eventually she said, OK, you've pestered me enough. We'll come and meet you, but you've got to come to me and record with her. So I've also been infinitely grateful to Claudia Hammond ever since then. So thank you to Claudia.
It is very nice to hear that she is a decent person too. Now, you may have noticed, particularly our lovely listener, Jan, that we've been slightly filling for time here. We are very much hoping to still bring you Amanda Owen as a guest, but at the moment that's not proving to be particularly easy. So we're going to go to something else again. When the new Archbishop of Canterbury is confirmed on Wednesday, she'll become the first woman to lead the Church of England. But Dame Sarah Mullally's gender is already threatening to cause a schism in the global Anglican Church. So who is she, and can she unite that church and turn things around in the embattled organisation? Well, today's episode of the Story podcast has been looking into this. Manveen Rana spoke to Kaya Burgess, science and religious affairs correspondent at The Times, and started by asking what will be in Dame Sarah's in tray on day one.
There's a mix between internal and sort of global things, essentially. She's going to continue fighting on assisted dying to try and oppose that. Within the church, there are still these huge divisions over issues to do with same-sex relationships. Are they going to allow same-sex couples to have standalone blessing ceremonies in church? gay priests are allowed to have civil partnerships? Will they be allowed to have civil weddings? And they just yeah. kick that down. And that's created a really huge rift. The culture wars, essentially, have are kind of infecting the church as they
still
are.
Still raging everywhere inside else. The church, yeah.
yeah, exactly.
And what about numbers? I mean, how healthy is the church looking?
We're in a really fascinating point at the moment where there are lots of these claims going around that there is a kind of Christian revival underway in Britain, propped up by some sort of surprising surveys that some statisticians who followed these things for decades say these look kind of quite like outliers. And when you look at the Church of England, like everywhere else, their attendance figures clearly plummeted in 2020 because of COVID lockdowns.
Yeah.
And then slowly but surely, the last 3 or 4 years, they've ticked back up again. And these are the first years in 50 years that there's ever been any increases in attendance, because it's been a decline since the 60s. And so they're saying, look, growing attendances. But you're saying, well, they're still only rebounding from the pandemic, and they're still a long way below where they were in 2019, and it's plateauing. And so the tricky thing is going to be is you're going to only time will tell.
And you mentioned there are also sort of global problems. She won't be popular across the Church of England.
No, I mean, there are still about 600 churches or parishes in the Church of England out of about 12,000, so it's about 5%, I think, who formally reject women as church leaders. They're allowed to kind of sign this sort of resolution, it's called, to say we don't want a woman leading our parish, we don't want a woman bishop overseeing us.
Wow.
And there are clearly Anglican churches abroad in different countries that don't have women bishops at all. And clearly she is still the kind of main figurehead of the Anglican communion. That's going to be rowed back slightly to be a bit slightly more rotating, but she's still the spiritual leader, really. And so she, a big part of her role is going to be trying to stop Anglican churches in sort of what they call the global south from just saying, you know what, we're going to completely split away and do yeah. our own thing, which is a threat.
Because there is often the sort of threat of schism at synod, when you know a lot of these Anglican churches from the global south do already threaten to go because of a lot of liberal values, but certainly female priests.
Yeah, exactly.
Could this be the moment that really sets that off?
I still think the question of sexuality and same-sex relationships is higher in people's minds.
Really?
I mean, where there was a small kind of faction that sort of said, we reject the Archbishop of Canterbury's leadership altogether. And people thought, is that because she's a woman? This is after Sarah Mullally was named. And you thought, well, that was certainly probably playing into it. But it was probably more the fact that she hadn't stood up and opposed same-sex blessing.
That is The Story. It is the daily podcast released by The Times. Give it a listen. You heard Manveen Rana talking to Kyle Burgess about what's going to happen in the new era of the latest Archbishop of Canterbury.
Coming up here on Times Radio, John Pienaar will be here at 4 o'clock. But we've also had some developing news over the last hour and a half or so. Pubs and music venues in England are going to be given a 15% discount on their business rate bills from April. They won't see increases for 2 years. That is a climb down from what the government had initially announced. And I think it was, if we were counting the government U-turns, it was maybe number 12. More on that to come. It is 4:15. This is Fee Glover and me, Rosie Wright, on Times Radio with Wix. Book your free design appointment at wix.co.uk.
Times Radio, Market Watch. In association with FNC Investment Trust. Listen to Times Radio to hear all the latest financial news from all the global stock markets. Get insight, analysis, and up-to-the-minute information to help you get the most from your investment portfolio. Times Radio, Market Watch. Throughout the day, every Monday to Friday, on Times Radio, in association with FNC. It's smart to start with FNC. Find out more at fnc.com. Capital at risk.
The State of It is the new podcast from The Times and The Sunday Times. Join political heavyweights Stephen Swinford, Caroline Wheeler, Gabriel Pogrund and Patrick Maguire.
Only a very small handful of the people that I go out for lunch with will actually want to have a glass of wine. Nigel Farage is definitely one of them.
No party loyalty, just the inside track on the decisions and policymakers that shape your life. The State of It is available to listen now on the Times Radio app or from your preferred podcast provider.
Listen to Times Radio at 6:30 every weekday morning for your indispensable briefing on the latest politics, business and sports news of the day.
Incredible snorkeling!
Carnival!
Sunrises and sunsets.
Grilled lobster.
Poppycats and kayaking!
Morning swim.
Pina coladas.
Serene spas.
If you love the sound of a Caribbean holiday, then Sandals have every little thing covered. Do it all or do nothing at all. Your perfect holiday is waiting at sandals.co.uk. Sale now on. Atoll protected.
Here's the truth about AI. AI is only as powerful as the platform it's built into. ServiceNow puts AI to work for people across your business, removing friction and frustration for your employees, supercharging productivity for your developers, providing intelligent tools for your service agents to make customers happier. All built into a single platform you can use right now. That's why the world works with ServiceNow. Visit servicenow.com/UK/AI for people.
Global events.
There's a warning that the impact of climate change is getting more severe and we're not prepared.
Breaking news.
Following allegations of potential fraud raised by the Times.
Reactive analysis.
What's going on in the government about discussion of extremism?
From the world's best journalists.
We're trying to look at some of the questions about migration and the implications for the economy, jobs and public services.
On DAB, online, on the app and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio.
Paul has been in touch and it's a very good point, Paul, and I'm sure an awful lot of people will sympathise with you. Good afternoon. Regarding greener energy, I was once quoted for solar panels for my energy. I would have had to borrow to pay for it, and it worked out it would have taken almost 20 years for my savings to match the cost. I had no intention to stay in the house that long. And that's the problem, the long lens of the problem and the short lens on the problem, and which one you're going to feel comfortable taking. Now, coming up after 4pm, it is John Pienaar. He'll be covering the events in Minneapolis with a councillor from the city who wants ICE out, and also a Republican senator. And Giles Corran, who's just cancelled his holiday to the US because he doesn't think it's safe to take his family there. You can also hear John's conversation with George Robertson, author of the Strategic Defence Review. That's after a new report which says that the American Security Guarantee for Europe is no longer valid under Trump, and the UK is dangerously unprepared for war. After him, Kate Borsay has got a fantastic programme for you tonight. She'll be previewing Keir Starmer's trip to China with a panel of experts, and she's also looking further into the infighting in Labour as MPs angry at the PM's leadership circulate letters expressing their disapproval.
It's going to be a tricky trip, isn't it? Because there's all the kind of things we've talked about this morning about the security implications with China. We've got that sort of super embassy that's got the green light now. But Keir Starmer has this criticism levelled at him that he spends a lot of time on the international stage, and therefore then hears that mantra, never hear Keir. And as Keir is going to start travelling, if that's how we're calling him, Sir Keir Starmer, he's going to travel today, won't come back until Sunday, which is be quite a long time to go away. And he will say this trip is actually about the cost of living because it's about our trade relationship with China. But it's not going to feel like that if you feel as though the Prime Minister is hiding on the international stage rather than tackling the domestic issues.
I think that some people will very much agree with you, Rosie. I'll tell you what, we've got a fantastic guest relevant to this topic tomorrow. We're going to be talking to Sebastian Lai, who is Jimmy Lai's son. And obviously, he is hoping that something material happens during Sir Keir Starmer's trip to China that will help his father be released from prison. Jimmy Lai is very ill. His crime is promoting democracy in Hong Kong. He was an extremely successful publisher, a very wealthy Hong Konger. He's got an awful lot of people supporting him, but he's been ill for some time. And Sebastian Lai, the last time he came in on the programme, which was probably about a year ago, was genuinely worried that his father wouldn't survive to see any kind of freedom. So we will talk more about that tomorrow. Anne has asked what's going on the programme. We're covering the news now, Anne. That's all I can tell you.
It's 10 minutes to four. The government has announced details of its support package for pubs. They'll get a 15% cut to new business rates bills from April, followed by a 2-year real terms freeze. There'll also be a review into the method used to value them for business rates. Ministers say the support will be worth about £1,650 for the average pub. It's also going to apply to music venues. I can imagine there will be a chorus of other venues, cafes, for example, hotels, who say, well, we would like it too. The Economist Vicky Price joins us. Vicky, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So in real terms, for a pub, a business that is eligible for this, so music venues and pubs, how much is this going to help in terms of what they've said, the financial peril they're in?
As you said, I mean, the actual, if you average it out, the actual amount per pub is particularly great. Particularly for larger pubs, it's not going to make a huge amount of difference because they've already seen quite an increase in their cost. But the interesting thing in the whole package is that they will look again at the way in which it's all valued for the future. Because, of course, it was quite a shock when the day after the budget, this revaluation of the of pubs in particular and hospitality more generally came out, including, of course, supermarkets and the whole retail sector affected. So there is an acknowledgement, at least, that this is an issue. And if indeed the valuation is looked at again, and we've heard actually earlier from the British Retail Consortium saying that there have been some assumptions made on revenues for the future which are wrong, and that's how this valuation has been done for them. If there is a revaluation and it affects wider the wider sector, not just pubs, then that thing is going to be very, very positive.
So talk us through what the original announcement was in the budget and the position that it then put pubs in.
Yes, well, the original announcement was good news. We actually are reducing the multiplier. The multiplier is the way in which you look at the value of a premise, if you like, and then you do a percentage of that premise, which is then due to be paid as tax. So that's been reduced, supposedly. The only problem is the following day we heard that the actual value of that premise that had been looked at again because it hadn't been redone since the time of COVID is now considerably higher than what we thought before. So you may reduce the percentage you use for the calculation of how much business rate you have to pay, but if the value of that has increased hugely, then the percentage you do, even though the actual figure supposedly lower, so the percentage increase, the sort of point you use to do the valuation is of a higher figure. So you end up paying an awful lot more. So the calculations have been that what you'd be getting is something like a 75% increase for the average pub over 3 years than where they were before. So despite the fact that there were there was some concession in terms of the way you do the percentage of the valuation itself had gone up, so you paid more. That was really what everyone didn't expect, but got the day after the budget. And that's why they now had to backtrack quite significantly. And what we're talking about really is yet another U-turn.
Yes, well, exactly. And now clarity on the extent of that U-turn. UK Hospitality, they represent the sort of wider sector. They say the measures address an acute challenge facing pubs. However, they go on to say the reality remains. We've still got restaurants, hotels facing severe challenges from successive budgets. How much pressure do you think there is going to be, Vicky, and sort of clamour is there going to be from the rest of the hospitality industry to say, OK, but why just the pubs and the music venues? Why not restaurants, cafes too?
Indeed. Well, there already has been a lot of pressure. So we've been hearing it today. We've been hearing for the last few weeks. We've been hearing it really since the budget itself. And I think that will continue. And the question is going to be, of course, whether individual MPs in various areas around the country get that pressure themselves from their business community, which they represent there. So I think that will continue. The question is, at the end of the day, of course, how much money is there available? Because a lot of those business rates go to local authorities and they use it to provide all sorts of services. The rest, of course, comes for the moment still to the Treasury. You know, how much are they prepared to let go, if you like, of that expected increase, which was huge, actually. If you look at what the Office of Budget Responsibility was anticipating and you compare, you know, where we were back in 1990 to where, you know, we might be in a few years' time, what they expect to collect from business rates more generally across the economy moved from something like 10 billion to possibly about 40 billion or so at the end of this parliament. So we're talking about a very substantial increase in business rates over that period. And of course, you know, to a considerable extent, I mean, inflation hasn't kept up with that.
Yeah. I mean, according to the government, the package is going to cost £80 million in its first year. And then we don't actually know the evaluations for the years to come. They say the Office for Budget Responsibility will take a look at that. From your sense, Vicky, they've obviously decided they can afford this concession, but where does it fit into the other sort of spending commitments that have already been announced?
Well, I mean, the truth is that if that is all it costs in the short term, then that's not big. If you look at the overall spending increase and borrowing, which this government has been embarking on, it's tiny. So it's not going to make a huge dent if that is all that the package is for the moment.
Yeah, that 80 million.
Yes. What will make a difference is if this evaluation or revaluation that was taking place before is looked at again. And if that is the case, then we might see that the cost is considerably greater than that. But we'll have to wait and see what they do on this. And of course, if they then extend it to the rest of the economy, then that's going to be considerably greater.
And that was a couple of ifs. Vicky, thank you very much. The Economist, Vicky Price.
Now, apologies if you were looking forward to hearing Amanda Owen, the Yorkshire Shepherdess. Unfortunately, we haven't been able to speak to her today. We'd like to correct just one thing. Amanda is not going through a divorce, as we said, but is in fact separated from her husband. It can happen to the best of us. Glyn has been in touch this afternoon to say, Fee, in my teaching days, when the kids used to get through my lessons unexpectedly quickly and I had 10 minutes to fill, I used to do a quiz or a game of hangman. Any help? Glyn, we absolutely adore your company. And in fact, I have got a hangman in front of me. It's four letters. It's just one vowel. I'll keep you posted.
We can now speak to the pub owner, Glenn Hutchinson, who is the landlord of Spinners at Cowling in Chorley. Glenn, thank you for chatting to us. This news then, a 15% cut to new business rates. What impact does that have on your ability to run your pub?
Absolutely nothing. Nothing at all. They've basically given us 15% discount off 100% increase. It's absolutely absurd how they're expecting us to continue and survive. It's the equivalent of saying, right, you have to put your beer up by 60p a pint, but don't worry, you can knock 9p a pint off that because we're trying to help you out. It's madness.
What decisions will you be making as a result of this?
We're going to have to sit down and address it where it comes. But just to put it into perspective, we're a small business relatively. For us just to stand still on when the increase comes into play in April, so put into account that alcohol sales in pubs and restaurants are in decline anyway. For us to stand still, we'd have to sell an extra barrel of beer every single day, an extra 11 gallon of beer every day. That's 88 pints, just to stand still where we are. Now, places aren't getting busier. They're getting quieter because prices are increasing. The cost of living is increasing. So how do they expect you on an industry that's already struggling? How do they expect you to sell an extra barrel of beer every day and not selling it at the price you sell it at?
You lay out the problem very clearly. Glenn, thank you. I do wish we had had more time. Glenn Hutchinson, the landlord of the Spinners at Cowling in Chorley, who says this does not help at all.
Well, as we said before, sometimes we don't have time when we need it, and sometimes we've got too much time when we don't. Neil says, very nice, Filling. I don't think you've done the nation a service, Fee, by dispelling the myth about dye in swimming pools. We would like to correct that. The dye is in swimming pools. It's purple. It never comes off, kids, ever. Our producer today was Felix Forbes. Our technical operator was Ryan Boyden. Rosie, it's been lovely to have you here. Let's go for a lie down.
I think so.
Up next, it's John Pienaar with Drive.
Across the UK, on DAB, online, and on your smart speaker, this is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
Thank you. Thank you, Fee. Thank you, Rosie. At 4 o'clock, I'm John Pienaar with Times Radio Drive. And here are the headlines. A report by MPs and a senior NATO advisor warns the US is no longer a reliable ally and Britain must prepare for war. And the government's announced pubs and music venues will get 15% off business rates bills from April as part of a major support package. And coming up, my exclusive interview with Lord Robertson, the former NATO Secretary General and the lead reviewer of the Strategic Defence Review, about the constraints that was placed on him and his fellow authors, well, try Trust me, you will not want to miss what you are about to hear. And we're going to go live to Minneapolis to talk to a city councillor who wants the ICE federal agency out of his town. And are the Russians pushing the conflict in Ukraine closer to nuclear disaster? The Times' Maxim Tucker has been talking to the head of the country's Atomic Energy Authority, and I'll be joined by him just before five.
This is Times Radio.
Now the news with Will Hobbs.
Thank you, John. Good afternoon. A report from the Civitas think tank has warned the United States is no longer a reliable ally and Britain must make an immediate transition to war readiness if it is to protect its democracy. It says the security guarantee the US has provided for seven decades is no longer valid because President Trump has put America's commitment to defend Europe in doubt and the international rules-based order is effectively dead. The report was written by the MPs Sir Bernard Jenkin and Derek Twigg and the former senior NATO adviser Chris Donnelly. Meanwhile, the European Union and India have signed a trade agreement billed as the largest ever concluded by either side and a repudiation of President Trump's protectionist policies. The European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen hailed the agreement to end $4 billion worth of tariffs as a signal to the world that rules-based cooperation still delivers great outcomes. Matt Goodwin has been announced as Reform UK's candidate in the upcoming Gorton and Denton by-election. He's a political commentator, GB News presenter and honorary president of the party's student wing. The Times' political reporter Daisy Eastlake says some were expecting a bigger name, but that now it appears all to play for.
It's a good early test for the Greens, but also for Reform to see if they can win a seat like this. This seat's quite interesting. It's got quite a strong working class population, but it's also got quite a strong Muslim population. And it's polling currently to be really tight between Reform and the Greens. Now, sources on both sides of that have said that if Andy Burnham had been allowed to stand as the Labour candidate, then this would not be the situation that we would be in right now, and that would have been a much more difficult fight for either of those parties.
Pubs and music venues in England will see a 15% cut to their business rates bills from April as part of a government U-turn support package. It follows backlash after a much larger discount was removed in November's budget, leading to warnings of job cuts and closures. Ministers say venues will save an average of £1,650 next year. But Shadow Chancellor Sir Mel Stride told MPs the support's not enough.
Mr Speaker, is that it? A temporary sticking plaster that will only delay the pain for a few, while thousands of businesses despair as their bills skyrocket.
A countdown clock in Tel Aviv's been turned off 843 days and 12 hours after it began counting the captivity of Israeli hostages in Gaza. Hostages Square became a rallying point for those demanding their release following Hamas's October 7th attack in 2023. The Israeli military announced yesterday the body of the last remaining hostage has been found. A former Labour MP has been charged with sexually assaulting a woman in 2022. 41-year-old Conor McGinn was due to appear at Westminster Magistrates Court today to face one count of sexual assault. McGinn of Lambeth, South London, was MP for St Helens North from 2015 until he stood down in 2024. And Minnesota's chief judge has ordered the head of ICE to appear in court this week. Chief Judge Patrick J. Schiltz says the Trump administration failed to comply with orders to hold hearings for detained immigrants. Todd Lyons, the acting director of ICE, must appear personally in court on Friday. And for a news bulletin when you want it, search for the Times News Briefing on any podcast platform.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker. John Pienaar at Drive on Times Radio.
Hello, I'm John Pienaar with Drive on Times Radio. Thanks for joining me. We are on the cusp of war and we are nowhere near ready. Not my words, not even the familiar alarm call by military leaders, past and present. It's the warning of the former Secretary General of NATO and the former British Defence Secretary Lord Robertson in an exclusive interview with this programme. And here's what's really remarkable. Lord Robertson, as part of the Strategic Defence Review, was told by the government not to say anything in that paper that amounted to a call for significant increases in defence spending. Now, if there's anything more likely to fuel the argument that Keir Starmer, the Chancellor, Rachel Reeves and ministers have their heads in the sand about the need to confront the danger facing the country and Europe and NATO from an aggressive Vladimir Putin in the Kremlin, it's hard to see what that might be. Now, Robertson, as you'll hear in a moment, seems understanding of the government's keenness to avoid making statements that stretch beyond its existing policy and spending constraints. He also makes clear he thinks those constraints must change. Now, in a moment, you'll be hearing from the Times Defence editor, Larissa Brown, and you can hear my interview with Lord Robertson on his thoughts. He wrote the foreword to a think tank report warning of the need to strengthen our defences, and quickly. Now, he's spoken out, and he's spoken out bluntly. What are you thinking? Send me a text, 87222, start with the word Times, retweet to @TimesRadio. Now let's talk about that report. It's by the think tank Civitas. It says, among many other things, that the authors of the Strategic Defence Review were dissuaded from raising public alarm or making recommendations that would commit the government to significantly increase defence spending. Civitas also says the security guarantee that the US has provided for 7 decades is, and I'm quoting, no longer valid. And the international rules-based order is, and I'm quoting again, effectively dead. Well, earlier, I spoke to Lord Robertson, George Robertson, one of the authors of the Strategic Defence Review. He also wrote the foreword to the Civitas report, and he gave me his diagnosis of what the UK needs to do to address this situation.
The Strategic Defence Review that I was the lead reviewer on made it clear that we are basically under attack just now in the grey zone. Cyber attacks and organised crime and sabotage is already underway from our adversaries, but that we need to basically make the country more resilient and we need to build deterrence. So warfighting readiness is the way in which we will deter potential adversaries from attacking the United Kingdom. That has to be done and has to be done urgently.
As you know, the report, it says, among many other things, that we must prepare for the worst. I'm quoting now. We must prepare for the fact that the US may no longer be a reliable ally and may well become a separate actor pursuing a narrow understanding of its national interests. Just develop that point for me.
This report has been written by a Labour MP and a Conservative MP who have both got knowledge and experience in the defence area. And what they say makes absolute sense. And it confirms what we said in the Strategic Defence Review last year. It's hugely important that we build national resilience, protect the homeland, and at the same time build war readiness in order to be able to deter adversaries or potential adversaries from attacking us. The reality is that Vladimir Putin and others have already declared war on us in the so-called grey zone.
Yes.
With cyber attacks, sabotage attacks, directed assassinations and disinformation campaigns. But we've got to be ready for something that is even bigger than that, because we've seen what Russia has done in Ukraine, and they might well do that to us in the future.
Yes. I mean you described the report and its recommendations as sensible, based on well-informed judgment. But to read that we need to prepare for the fact that America may no longer be a reliable